me copy.
Hello and welcome to the Miko Bits show, and I am your host, Miko Bits, and today we have Yi Ying Lu, who is an esteemed artist and creator of the Fail Whale and is doing exciting work in the NFT arts movement. So I guess without further ado, here's Yi Ying. Hello.
Thank you, Miko. Hi. Good to be here.
Welcome to the show. So, you know, one of the things that I really think the audience would be fascinated by is to hear kind of directly from an artist and to learn a bit about this journey that you're on, right? So I'd love to kind of have you start at the beginning and kind of explain sort of the course of your journey to this land of NFT.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here. So the whole NFT journey actually started back in 2009 when I first come to San Francisco Bay Area. So as Miko mentioned, I created the artwork, which eventually became the Twitter Fail Whale in the early days of Twitter during around 2007 or 8 to all the way to 2013. Every time when Twitter went down, people will see this white whale lifted by eight little birds. And I was the original artist behind the artwork. I initially created the artwork back in 2007, which during the time I was living and study in Sydney, Australia. And I made the artwork actually initially was not commissioned by Twitter. It was a personal piece when I was still living in Sydney, Australia, New South Wales, pun not intended. But at the time I just came back from London, UK after a exchange study, and I was doing my final year in school, and I miss my friends in UK, but also miss my friends in China. I was born and raised in Shanghai, China. So it was around the same time when Twitter, Facebook, and all that social media website came about. So there's a lot of FOMO that people will send you, birthdays and graduation ceremonies. So I couldn't physically be there with my friends. So I realized, well, what I studied was visual communication. Why don't I just communicate this massive wish to be physically be there with my friends as a visual piece? So I created the whale initially, and I called it the Lifting a Dreamer. It's almost like an impossible dream come true. And by serendipity, the co-founder and creative director of Twitter, Biz Stone, found it online and licensed it. And next thing you know, it became their iconic service breakdown image.
Yeah, I remember those days. And to me, when I experienced the Fail Whale, it was actually the dawn of a kind of a new form of distributed computing and clustering, right? So in essence, the way that Twitter failed was kind of novel, which is you would see the fail whale, and then you would click again and refresh, and then it would be working again, right? So it's very different from the olden kind of crash. Well, you know, before that, when systems would crash, it would just crash and it would be gone for a long time, you know. And so this kind of feeling that I got from it was very profound, and I felt like the all of the different servers in the cluster were like little birds, you know, lifting up the whole service. So that was kind of my impression, and I, you know, I really was excited to meet you when I finally met, because, you know, the Fail Whale was an exciting part of our early internet journey at the very beginning of the Twitter service.
Yeah, absolutely, Miko. And it was funny because you knew my work before you met me in person, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember I met you in 2013 at this event called Yes and Yes Yes. I also designed their logo and also the t-shirts and all the artworks for the event. And it's called the Yes Whale. And Miko at the time at the event was teaching a yoga class. And for the longest time, I thought Miko was a professional yoga instructor. And then I realized after a long time, he is a very experienced VP of marketing for a tech company back then. What's really interesting is very much similar to how I met Miko. I connected with hundreds of Silicon Valley founders, investors, and engineering people and artists because of this art piece I did. The reason why that I ended up coming to San Francisco was I did some artwork in 2008 when I was still living overseas. People just reached out to me via email. And around the same time, you would see hundreds of users would started to create all kinds of different reinterpretations of the whale, whether it's a street art or a cake. And you have fashion illustrations. People would just send me their drawings or pictures they found on the street. What's also really interesting is because of the artwork, it also creates communities around the world. So you would have Twitter clubs in New York. I have friends, Tom Lee Mojello would reach out. Or in the West Coast, we have Sean Osteen starting a Fail Whale fan club. And so I also did a lot of work for the community. So there was a fail party in the middle of 2008, and I created the artwork for the community. And they said, we didn't have any budget to pay you for the artwork, but if you ever come to San Francisco, we owe you a party. And 6 months later in 2009, I was fortunate enough to win this award called Shorty Awards, which celebrate the content creators on the internet. And so I was flying out from Sydney to New York for the award ceremony. And on the way back, there was no direct flight. So I have to stop in West Coast. So I decided to come to San Francisco for 3 days to meet all the people that I have interact with on the internet, but never met in person. And so in the meantime, I also emailed the people I have, you know, worked before on the first fail party. I said, can we do the second fail party? And they said, there's only 10 days away, but we'll see what we can do. And ended up having 400 people showed up. And that's how I kind of connected people in person. Similarly to you, Miko, there was not only friendship, but also a lot of business opportunity came out of these connections. Because a lot of people are starting their new company. They need logos, marketing, and all kinds of different creative works. So I was working remotely from Sydney from 2009 all the way to 2015 before I moved to San Francisco in person.
Yeah, I guess to me, like, this is a great kind of auspicious start. And, you know, it's terrific to hear about, like, you know, this kind of starting a career with a bang. But, you know, I understand that from a lot of people in the arts that it's sometimes, you know, not so easy. So, you know, I guess, you know, how would you characterize, you know, making your career in the art world?
That is a great question. I mean, part of me, I feel very fortunate that I was working with hundreds of startup companies, and I was also lucky enough to have the opportunities to work with a lot of startups and ended up becoming the creative director of 500 startups. And that was one of the major reasons why I moved to the Bay Area. But in the same time, I think being an artist, especially being a independent artist, when you start your career, and all the things are relatively new in terms of the digital right on social media. Even social media itself is very new. And so there was obviously a lot of good luck. And I was fortunate enough to work with larger company from Apple to Adobe, from Salesforce to Disney. Now, what I would love to share is the struggle as an artist. And I think this is something that people usually don't talk about. And I do think that being in the industry for more than 13 years now, I have firsthand experience of how much challenge it is like to be a independent artist. When I starting out, I remember when the Twitter whale was very well received, numerous major press were writing about it, from New York Times to Huffington Post. But in the same time, as an artist, especially when your artwork is digital, when the general public don't really have this sort of consensus on digital rights, you would have situation like people would listing the artwork as products on Etsy. And I would constantly get new notifications from, different vendors, and people would say, "Hey, I saw your work is on this platform and on the other platform. Is that an authorized piece?" And often it's not. So I spend a lot of time actually track down some of the pieces that some of the shops that was selling my products and without my permission. To the degree, it was almost too overwhelming. I wasn't spending time creating new artwork. Rather than that, I was spending time trying to track down the, unauthorized usage on different websites and also on physical places. So for almost 6 months, I think I wasn't able to do any creative work. And I realized that I was in this pretty depressing place where I thought, because my work is quite simple, maybe I should just not create. Because if I don't create any new pieces, then it's not easy to be copied. So I was in this sort of mental distress. And so I wasn't able to do new work for the longest time. And I still want to create, but part of me was too scared. If I keep on creating, people are just going to take it. And they're going to disregard my feeling as a creator. So it was a very debilitating state. And I was watching a lot of comedy at the time. I think that was the only thing that kept me feeling good. So I was watching a lot of comedy on YouTube. And the more I watch, there will be more recommendations from the algorithm. So there's one day there was a I was still kind of not feeling good, and I still wasn't able to do any new work. And there was this YouTube algorithm recommended video of this talk show host who's based in the US, and he's leaving this major network. He has worked for more than 2 decades. And his name is Conan O'Brien. And I've never actually heard about his name before because I wasn't growing up in the US and we didn't have the access of the network from Australia or China. So I was curious what he's going to say. It was the last episode of him leaving that network. And what was really fascinating is he said something that truly was what I needed to hear at the time. I wasn't aware. I just thought it was kind of serendipitous. I stumbled upon that video. And so Conan said, people, especially young people, never be cynical. Life is not going to turn out exactly what you want it. But if you keep on working hard and be kind, amazing thing is going to happen. He's like, believe me, amazing thing's going to happen. And that was a moment I realized I was watching it and I just saw myself sobbing, just have tears, like just crying. And I was like, this is exactly what I needed to hear. I still want to create and I still can create. I'm just gonna keep creating and keep be kind to others and just see how the magic is gonna unfold. And little do I know, about 8 months later, Conan's team at the time was at TBS reached out and said, "Yiying, we love your work and we would love to commission you do a new art piece for Conan's new show on TBS. It's the Conan show, and would you like to do that?" And so I was so honored because by then I have watched probably hundreds of episodes of his show, and I was already a big fan. And I did the piece, which is the Conan Pale Whale, which is Conan riding the lifting a dreamer, the Twitter fail whale. And I got the chance to meet him in person. I also was able to come to San Francisco, did my very first art show at Hotel des Arts, which is across the street of Chinatown, San Francisco. And I met more people And eventually I followed my calling to bridge the gap between art and tech and moved to San Francisco in 2015. And ever since, I was continue working in sort of intersection of art and technology.
Yeah, that's a fascinating journey. So I guess would love to kind of hear about how you've sort of moved. So you kind of were able to sort of rejuvenate yourself and kind of stage this creative comeback. But I guess how would you say things are affecting you now? And and how are you seeing this NFT? I know you've gotten involved, so I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, thank you. Things was there's obviously a lot of ups and downs as usual. It's part of the human journey. And what I think that just very recently, the reason why I'm starting this new NFT job, this is the first NFT job in 2021. I in fact did a my first NFT job last year on Nifty Gateway, and it was really I always wanted to express my gratitude towards you, Miko, because you were the person that you're the person that in giving me the opportunity to discover the connection between art and blockchain in the first place. And when I first discovered the power of combining blockchain and art was 2018 when you suggested me to go to the Ethereum Summit, where I auctioned one of the piece with 15 different artists in New York at the Lockdown Center. We were able to raise $200,000 in one night with CryptoKitty, Kevin Abosh, and Crypto Graffiti and other artists. And that was the time that I realized, wow, the artwork, when we can put it on blockchain and also with the right audience, we can indeed create a lot of commercial values. And also, we gave 50% of the proceeds to a nonprofit to empower artists to learn about blockchain technology. That was the moment that I realized that indeed, if we marry art and technology in the right way with the right intention, we could not only use this tool to empower artists, but also to empower the larger ecosystem. So I was very excited about the opportunity of art on blockchain. And it's just so happened that non-fungible token became more and more mainstream from last year. I think it's in some way, obviously, during the entire 2020, it has been very challenging to everyone. I was also doing a lot of in-person speaking projects, and I couldn't do that like in person. But I also realized this is an opportunity to find new avenues to let out the creative voice. So when I was suggested by you, it was funny that I don't know if you know the story how I connected with Whale Shark and also how I started to do my first job because you invited me to meet the co-founder Alex on OpenSea. And Alex saw my Whale Shark piece, which I actually have it here. So I showed the Whale Shark piece to Alex. It was literally after the World Whale Shark Day. So I made this piece on that day, and I was sharing Alex because I thought it was funny because his company's name is OpenSea. So I thought, I was like, oh, there's a whale shark. Maybe we should put it on OpenSea. And he's like, oh, did you know whale shark? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like a specific whale shark in the Pacific Ocean? She's like, no. Whale shark on Twitter, whale shark pro on Twitter. And I have no idea what he was talking about. It was
That's
like
great.
another world. He's like, let me connect you with Whale Shark. You guys should connect on Discord. So I ended up having an amazing conversation. I think it went for 2 hours with
Amazing.
Whale Shark on Discord. We never actually met in person. We just chatted and we just connected. We had a lot of things in common. And we all sort of share the same love of art and culture, as well as Asian heritage. And that was the moment that I realized This is kind of magical how art could connect people in such deep level, even though you've never met in person, like in physical world. And Whale Shark was so kind. He said, you know, I think you should start it to do some jobs. Maybe you can start with Nifty Gateway. So I had my very first job on Nifty Gateway in November last year. And we basically sold out more than 400 pieces within 10 minutes. And so that was the moment I realized this NFT world is really picking up. And so the reason why it took me a long time to get to this stage where is I'm creating and doing this new job, it happened to be the 1 year anniversary of Whale Shark's platform, which is also a community called Whale Community. It just so happened I had so much serendipity relationship with Whale itself. And I met a lot of people on the Whale platform. So the community manager, Anissa, reached out and said, this is 1 year anniversary of Whale, and we would love to invite you to do special piece, you know, to celebrate the community. It happened to be Whale Shark's birthday on that day, the 18th of May. What's also really important for me to mention is I have been doing a lot of nature conservation project. And one of the reasons why I was making all these animals at the first place was I was doing a project last year in response to the United Nations biological diversity conservation. And so the whale shark was initially created as part of that project. So I thought, why not do the similar thing like what we did in 2018, which is give the 50% of the proceeds to a nonprofit that's going to empower the larger ecosystem. And that's when I decided to do this job and also give 50% of the proceeds to the ocean conservation nonprofits. And this is truly use the open sea, that platform, to support the real open sea. And it was just so happened that the entire community was very supportive. And Whale Shark, on the birthday when we announced the jobs, he didn't know anything about this. The whole community manager was like, we are going to do this as a surprise for him. So I created this golden whale shark. I created two pieces. It's the two identical pieces, one for Whale Shark as a birthday gift. One is going to be auctioned. And Whale Shark was so generous. As soon as he saw this, he said, I'm going to match 100% of the highest bidder. And so it was a surprise for him, but he also gave me a surprise by giving such a generous offer. So we are very excited to announcing this job, and the entire job will consist a golden whale shark and a neon whale shark, which there's only 5 pieces in the world. So if you are the top 5 bidders of the golden whale shark, and if you didn't win, it's okay. You still have the chance to get the neon whale shark, and there's only 5 pieces available. Well, I also made 88 pieces of the DJ beluga whale. That's the same whale as the whale that you saw on Twitter. Now it is a DJ. And I also created a maraca whale, which is kind of a company with the beluga whale. It's a gray whale. I also made a sort of an open edition, which is a more affordable tier, which is the red packet dolphins. That's a very good story. Basically, on the whale platform, they have this game called No Touch Game. The genesis is that they're going to give out red packets to the community, but the rule is you shouldn't touch it. If you touch it, the game will reset. If people wait long enough, the whole amount is going to be distributed to the participants. So everybody will get a portion of the whole amount. But if during the time that people touch it, then everybody lost. The only person that touches it will get the money, but everybody will know that because this person's greed, everybody lost their share. So it is an amazing social experiment to teach people to kind of sometimes sacrifice for your own, for the greater good. So I created this dolphin to celebrate that game. And there's also additional giveaways. There's about 20 or 30 pieces of golden no touch game winners for the people who are long-term players that never touch the red pack. So they will get this as rewards. I also have created 12 pieces, super limited edition, to all the whale community organizers and moderator as a gift that I want to give back to the people that really shape up the community. So that's the entire job. And it is going to be available on OpenSea. And on Sunday, the 23rd of May at 6 p.m. Pacific time, the auction will be ended. So I really am looking forward to see the result. And thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll definitely, get this up as soon as possible so people can join in, because I think it's very exciting. If I were a journalist writing this story, I would write a story that says from fail whale to crypto whale, right? So I think that would be the way I would put the headline, and I think that, in a way, like it's sort of the thing that is great to me is, in a sense, like you're embodying a really important artist's mission, which is that as people kind of connect to this sort of symbolic, and in your case, purely digital layer, because the art is itself is digital, right? In a sense, like you're not leaving behind like the physical world, right? So in a sense, like when you contribute to ocean conservation, you connect the digital open sea to the actual open sea, and you connect the digital whales to the real whales. Like a lot of that has to do with kind of maintaining that important connection, to our physical environment, to our presence here on Earth, and so in a way, like connecting this circle, I think, is in some ways like it's hard to sort of separate that from your artistic expression itself. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
I really appreciate the question. In 2017, I was fortunate enough to interview one of my biggest inspiration and hero in the design and art world, whose name is Milton Glaser, Mr. Milton Glaser. He designed the iconic "I Love New York" icon. And one question I asked him, and I still vividly remember his answer, was, "What truly matters?" And his answer was, "The only thing there is the relationship that you have with the people, the environment that you live with, you're interacting with. Nothing else matters." He said,
Wow.
"Fame, money is bullshit," in his own word.
Wow.
He said, "This is the only thing that matters." And it really kind of stuck with me. And it made me reconsider and reevaluate just everything I do.
That's super profound and powerful, because to me, the thing that's so fascinating about what's happening with non-fungible tokens is that what an artist is doing is they're taking their time, right? Which is non-fungible. Like, time is non-fungible. Like, every moment we have on this earth isn't fungible, right? It's each one is completely new moment. And an artist is effectively minting a representation of that non-fungible time, right? And in essence, the thing that's amazing is that in a traditional commercial environment, people are exchanging their non-fungible time for fungible money, right? So in essence, like this is really almost a trick. Like in a sense, like what has happened is that people's time has sort of been commoditized and commercialized, right? And I think that what we're seeing with the emergence of the creator economy is this really amazing transformation into a creator economy where people are creating a non-fungible asset with their non-fungible time, right? So that becomes a sincere expression of that person's sort of place. So, you know, I think it's a really wonderful potential space. And I think that it's exciting to see, you know, your art being represented this way, you know, and being recognized. And so, you know, to me, I think that it is a really incredible story that goes almost through the first internet wave generation to the blockchain wave internet generation, you know, through this natural symbol of the whale, right? So it is totally from a fail whale connecting all the way to a crypto whale, you know, and all of it is kind of connected through this natural symbol, you know, to which you don't have an exploitative relationship because you're contributing to the whale conservation, right? So in essence, you know, and I think it connects deeply to the story you were saying about how it can be emotionally hurtful to an artist such as yourself when people are exploiting your art for their commercial gain, because, you know, in a sense, like, you're not exploiting the whale, you know, for, you know, you're contributing back. So, you know, with that ethos, I think your offering becomes, you know, pure, like it becomes like a sincere offering, and it's consistent with the words of your, you know, inspiration and mentor and teacher.
Thank you. I just have to say, Miko, I think in terms of how we met and the relationship we built over the years was a truest expression of the initial inspiration of Silicon Valley, is paying it forward. And that's kind of how we connected in the first place. When I met you, you were paying it forward. You were teaching all the participants at this conference to do yoga. And I always share the story because people know you today as Miko, the amazing crypto investor. And people still say, Yiying, how did you meet Miko? And can you connect me with Miko? And every single time I tell people, I said, I met Miko because he taught me yoga. He taught a lot of people yoga. I thought he was a yoga instructor, and people just laugh. And at the time, I really had no idea of your professional background in terms of sure. whether you're an investor or you're like, I saw you as a human being that I get connected with. And we share a lot of things. You taught me about Bhagavad Gita. You taught me about Hanuman and a lot of rituals from yoga and Indian stories, which I think is more valuable than anything that money could purchase. And by itself, I think that is non-fungible. And that amount of time that we spent, and you being a mentor and being a friend and also being a teacher to me, it was something that I truly treasure. And in so many ways, I'm looking at the current situation or the current environment of Silicon Valley or just the world at large. A lot of times, a lot of relationships are very much transactional. You go to a conference, you exchange business cards, or you add each other on LinkedIn, and maybe you have worked with this person for 5 years, but you have no idea what is his true passion or what he really truly care about apart from the work you do. That's something really matters to me. I often talk to the founders, or I talk to people I met here. If you have all the money you need, you don't have to worry anything about commercial you know, practice, you have all the resources you need. What would you like to be? And it's not surprising to hear more and more of the technologist founders, they tell me, I want to write my own novel. I want to pick up my music gigs again. I want to be able to make my music. I want to be a filmmaker. I want to make my own movie. And at the end of the day, I think human experience is a non-fungible experience. Yeah. Yeah, and that is something I want to be able to facilitate
Yeah,
more.
I really appreciate that description because, the thing that is important to understand is that value in a fungible sense belongs to this digital symbolic layer, right? So the digital symbolic layer is where transactions occur, right? Whereas the relational is actually more about this mystery, right? Because, and it's what makes the relational non-fungible because you're relating to another human being, or you're relating to an art object like a whale, and you're relating, but when you relate to something that's real and non-digital, it's infinitely complex what you're relating to, right? So in a sense, like it's why the transactional will always be subordinate to the relational, right? Because the transactional is effectively fungible and the relational is non-fungible, and that, really time and relation always kind of will maintain their preeminence over the transactional, and that's just the natural order of things. So, I think it's beautiful to see expressed in your art, and it's great to see, the connection to nature, and it's great to see the recognition in this kind of new resurgent, internet wave, right? Because obviously you were very much there and strongly present as an artist in this birth of the first commercial internet and Twitter. And now I think this birth of the new internet digital age of blockchain, I think is kind of host to a whole new set of whales. I hope
Yes,
a lot of
absolutely.
crypto whales will come visit and each go home with a representation of this this beautiful understanding.
Yeah, we would love to see more whales in the world, in the real world, but also in the ethereal world as well.
Wonderful. All right. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thanks for joining the Miko Bits show.
Thank you for having me, and see you soon.
Okay.